Introducing Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB, AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Hilliard Macbeth, author of the second edition of the book When the Bubble Burst, Surviving the Canadian Real Estate Crash. He's also a portfolio manager and financial advisor in Edmonton. His website, MacbethMacLeodPartners.com. You can find him on Twitter at HMacBE. Welcome back to the show.
It's always a pleasure.
So the latest inflation numbers from Canada have hit. What are we officially running at, and what do you think it probably is?
Well, you know, they're talking 6.9% from a year ago, and an interesting little piece of that, which didn't get hardly any attention. One article mentioned it, another article failed to. They talk about food and energy a lot, but the biggest component of Canadian inflation is shelter. And as it is in the U.S. as well, and the your gross CPI is 32% in shelter, and the core CPI, where they exclude food and energy, it's 40% shelter. And a key component of shelter is the cost of building housing and the cost of mortgage payments. So they don't actually include house prices. A lot of people are misled or misunderstanding this. The drop in house prices, which is starting to accelerate, isn't going to help inflation, because it's not measured in the CPI, at least not, it doesn't have a significant weight, but what does have a significant weight is mortgage interest costs. And mortgage interest costs have just started to go up just in the last couple of months. And, now CPI inflation and core CPI inflation is starting to get pushed higher as the Bank of Canada raises interest rates. This is happening in the U.S. as well. But mortgage rates in the U.S. are over 7% now, and mortgage rates in Canada are headed that way soon. And that's a huge increase on the monthly payment of a person buying a house, and that'll eventually show up in the CPI.
Now, Canadian home prices are falling. Is that good news for consumers or bad news for homeowners?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. We've got a... I walk the dog around the neighborhood and I keep track of these houses for sale. And, there's a house they've been trying to sell it for years, literally for years. And they were always listing it high at 1.98 million, somewhere in there. And I just noticed there's a new sign on the property. And now the new price is with the new realtor, of course. They always change realtors. And, it's 1.6 million, which is probably still too high. But anyway, it's quite a significant drop. But yes, across Canada, the prices have come down 3% and 2% in the last 2 months. So it's a total of 5% month over month. It's still up year over year a little bit in most cities. But for some reason, Peterborough, Ontario wins the prize. It came down 11.8% in 1 month, which is pretty amazing. And I guess that's those people who bought... there was a real surge during COVID of people buying out in these remote communities. But Peterborough is almost 2 hours away from the Greater Toronto area. Well, that was maybe going a little bit too far out. People discovered they didn't really want to live out there, and now they're trying to sell the impulsive purchase. They're trying to reverse it, and it might be hard to sell some of those homes without discounting the prices quite a bit.
Yeah, I think our young urbanites found out, no, they don't deliver pizza at 3 in the morning in Peterborough.
You know? Yeah, where's the Uber drivers when I need them?
It's like, yeah, they roll up the streets at 9 o'clock at night. You know, it's like I live in New Westminster, which is just outside of Vancouver. Same thing here. After 10 o'clock at night, good luck finding anything open.
So the higher mortgage interest rates are gonna, they've just started to hit. And, because most people don't buy a home. You know, it's only like 5% normal turnover in a year, and it's even slower than that now as people are confused about what the price should be, and the buyers are holding off for lower prices, and the sellers are sticking to their anchor price that they've been holding on to for a while. But the few purchases or new mortgages that have been originated in the last while, three quarters of them were at variable rates, or they were at for short terms, 3 years or less. So that means that these people are all going to get hit. Some of them in the variables, as recently as a year ago, were getting 1.5-2% variable rate, and in the fall of last year, and now they're looking at close to 6%. So that's going to be a real shocker for them. Some of them barely, the reason they took variable rates was because they could qualify on a variable rate, but they couldn't qualify with a fixed rate and the stress test and all that. So now they're getting caught with that, and it's really, really going to be interesting times the next little while.
Now, we saw the head of the Fed even admit, look, hiking interest rates, that's not going to do anything to address supply chain problems, which are rampant around the planet. And one of our analysts even said, I believe this inflation is mostly supply chain problems. For example, Ford pickups are sitting there at the factory because the little plant that makes their Ford ovals that say Ford for the grill, it's in a COVID lockdown, so they can't send the trucks without their little Ford symbol on them. You know, silly little things like that. And that drives up costs because you have to store that. That costs you money. That's inventory not being sold.
Yeah, no, my Tesla that I took delivery of in November of last year, so it's a year now, it was sitting in the they don't really have showrooms. I could call it a showroom, I guess, in the Tesla delivery center for 2 weeks, and I kept phoning because I knew it was here. And they finally admitted that there was one little part missing, and so they finally cannibalized another car to get so they could deliver my car with the part that was missing because they kept waiting for it to arrive. So it's for some reason it's hard to imagine why this has persisted for more than 2 years, but it's the supply chain problem is now that doesn't necessarily justify people raising their prices. But they do. So there's a certain amount of, raising prices because we can get away with it going on. And, there's a lot of stuff happening that we don't really even know about. But the inflation is starting to broaden out to the service sector. It's starting to hit wages and salaries. And that's where the, higher inflation becomes more permanent. That's what's really scaring the central bankers right now. So yes, raising interest rates doesn't, in fact, because of the mortgage interest component, it actually makes inflation worse initially. But in the end, I think the central banks will have to stick to the idea of a dampening or killing demand by raising interest rates, because the economy now works more and more on just borrowed money. You know, it's like people never did get the wage increases that would have allowed them to keep up with house prices, for example. Nowhere near enough of a wage increase to buy a house compared to 20 years ago. So they had to make up the difference with borrowed money. And now that borrowed money is gone, you know, basically the cost of it is tripled, the demand will crash. And demand eventually will be enough to deflate the inflation numbers. But in the late 70s, early 80s, it took several years. It took 4 years of higher interest rates before inflation started to come down. I don't think it'll be that long this time because debt levels are much, much higher. So it'll happen faster, but and the central banks might get cold feet somewhere along the way and go on pause for a while and then have to resume hiking again. So it's a difficult time. We're definitely in for a difficult time right now.
We'll have more with Hilliard Macbeth right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Hilliard Macbeth. Hilliard, home sales falling, prices coming down. How far do you think they have to drop before Canadians say, yeah, that's low enough, I'm going to start looking for a new house again? Or are we seeing this transition where all these people who decided I'm going to sell my property in the big city, move out to the countryside and work remotely, and then your boss says, I want you in 2 days a week? And they're going, well, a 2.5 hour commute maybe isn't my cup of tea.
Yeah, it's got to come down a long way to get back to affordable. The last time we saw affordable was 15, 20 years ago in Canada. It's been people have been stretching into homes for many, many years. And we put out a chart right around this time of the year. So the house price numbers come out from Terra National Bank today. And by the end of today, early tomorrow, we'll have the new chart out. And we post it on Twitter. And or people can subscribe to get it as well. So it shows the rate of house price increase for Toronto, Vancouver, and the national composite house price. The rate of mortgage debt increase, or household debt actually, which includes mortgage debt, and then the CPI inflation and the wages and after tax income, median after tax income. And it's pretty clear from that chart that house prices have to come down quite a long way before they get back to reconnect with the rest of the economy based on wages and income and inflation and that sort of thing. The numbers, we normalized the numbers starting at 100 in 2000, and house prices are at 450, so fourfold increase, and wages haven't even doubled yet. They're just right around 200. So on that basis, we still need to come down 50% from the level. I don't know if it would get that far, but it's definitely got to come down a long way before people can get back into that affordability range again.
Do you have any guesstimate on how high the central bank rate will have to go before they say, whoa, this is enough? Do we have to see bodies in the street because everyone's been laid off?
You know, because the debt levels are so high right now, the debt's been growing at greater than 7% annually for 20 years now. So that means that they've quadrupled basically. At 7.2%, the debt would double every 10 years, and it's 22 years now. So they've more than quadrupled the debts. So with that amount of debt level, they won't have to raise rates as high as they did in the early 80s when the rates got up to, mortgage rates got up to 14, 15%. I would think that we're looking at 6-7% now. The next week, the Bank of Canada raises rates again, either 50 basis points or 75 basis points. Mortgage rates will go up again, so we'll probably hit that 7% level. That may be enough to get people to start changing their behavior in terms of debt. But the deflationary effect of debt takes a long time. You know, people's mortgages have to renew, and a lot of that kind of stuff has to happen. The government probably will get involved with helping people out to get through this difficult time. And so it's in the U.S. it took 4 years, 2006 to 2010, and house prices went down about 30%, 38%, and they took a lot of debt out of the household side of the balance sheet in the U.S. Most of that debt disappeared through foreclosure, where the debt is, they take your house away, but they also extinguish the debt as well. So I don't know if that has to happen in Canada, but obviously some of that probably has to happen.
Do Canadians have more of a attitude about they'll do anything to keep their home rather than foreclose, more of that attitude than they do in the U.S.?
You know, the U.S., it's just different in the U.S. because about half the people in the U.S., half the states in the U.S., they allow you to walk away from your home without any liability attached to you. If you just stop making your mortgage payments and say, I don't want it anymore, and the lender has to take it over. The other half, they have recourse to the individual, so they could chase you for the shortfall if the house is worth less than the mortgage. In Canada, almost everybody has recourse, so they can't just walk away from their home. The banks or the other lenders will chase you down for that deficit. There's a small exception in Alberta. There's a law that was brought in the 1930s but it's a very small number of people qualify for that exemption. So most people Ontario, BC, most of Alberta, depending on the type of loan you have. If you walk away from a house, they'll chase you for the deficit. And the only way out of that is personal bankruptcy, which we may see people opting for that. But you know, it's interesting. I saw a report out of the U.S. because it's now, you know, it's now 12 years after the bottom of the housing market in the U.S. And, somebody looked at, people that had the, so even the people that didn't have any recourse, they could get away completely free of any obligation if they just walked away. They didn't walk away, even though it made financial sense for them to do it. They kept making their mortgage payments, on a mortgage that was much bigger than the value of their house. And, so whether it's, optimism about the house value coming back, or whether it's a sense of shame, you know, if you take on a debt, you're obligated to pay it. I don't know. Maybe that was part of the study, but I didn't see that. But I was surprised. A tiny fraction of the number of people who had the option to walk away, really, basically without any, lingering obligations, they didn't take advantage of that opportunity. So that indicates that in Canada, it's unlikely that people would take the drastic step of going through personal bankruptcy. So a lot of them will just keep paying the mortgage payment and suffer silently. It's very, very difficult. And of course, one of the reasons I wrote my books about the housing bubble was I saw the parents getting involved in helping young adult offspring get into housing. And now the parents are on the hook in a lot of cases for helping them to get through that as well. And that's going to involve the older generation, the baby boomer generation in the deficit if people try and walk away. So it's a big societal impact that we're looking at. And, I don't know. It's really hard to predict how it's all going to work out.
Hilliard, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
Well, I just wanted to make Tesla came out with their quarterly earnings, and there was so the Tesla stock, you and I have talked about this several times over the years, is now down 50% from its peak. It hit about, on the split basis, hit about $400, and it's just right around trading today around $212, so about 50% drop. Now, it's still expensive in relation to where it was, 7 or 8 years ago. But the numbers are actually quite good. The revenue is, substantial. $21 billion in revenue in the quarter, so it's heading for $100 billion a year in revenue, and profits of $3.3 billion in net income. So, and they're positive cash flow, so they don't have any debt, and they have no substantial debt, I should say, and they've got lots of free cash flow. It's totally opposite of what all the short sellers were predicting as recently as a couple of years ago, but people were disappointed because they said, well, the demand for so they weren't able to deliver as many cars as they made, and people took that as a demand problem, but I'm sure it's not a demand problem. I think Tesla cars are expensive, and the profit margins for Teslas are extremely high compared to other vehicles. So Tesla could easily sell all the cars they wanted just by dropping their price slightly, and they'd still have a very good profit margin, but they can't keep up with production. But they do have new factories. They opened in Texas and in Germany, and the Chinese factories expanding, and the California factory is changing. So they're trying to keep up with the demand. But it is interesting to see people, and of course that's a reflection of the stock market. Well, the stock market is definitely in correction or bear market mode, and Tesla's a high flyer, so it's going to get its wings clipped like all of the other high flyers that were leading the stock market before this correction started. So it's interesting. There's a company to watch. Let's put it that way.
Right. And I'm just reading an online report about how much it costs to replace the battery in your electric vehicle. About 20, 23 grand. And after 10 years, you have to do that.
Well, actually, you know, the Model S came out at first in 12 years ago, 2010, and the record has been actually amazing that the batteries are lasting longer than they expected. And the battery, even though it might not be acceptable for the automobile anymore, it still could be useful for other things like storage on the, you know, for the household storage or something like that. So it can be recycled. So I don't think it's a it's a complete loss. But yeah, hopefully a person wouldn't have to pay the full $20,000. And that $20,000, by the way, when I bought my first Tesla 6 years ago, that was the estimate of the cost. I think the cost of the batteries has been coming down pretty steadily. So maybe you could get a cheap one for $10,000.
Wow, $10,000. That electric bike's looking better and better. Hilliard, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you.
My guest has been Hilliard Macbeth, author of the second edition of the book, When the Bubble Burst, Surviving the Canadian Real Estate Crash. Check out his website, MacbethMacLeodPartners.com. Find him on Twitter at HMACBE, HMACBE. If you have any questions for Hilliard or any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of House Street Media Incorporated.